Hello and welcome back to the third episode of the layover of the podcast from Jetlag, the game, the series. We have so much to cover because this episode was chock-a-block. That's our word of the day, right? Stealing words from Ben.
It's a good word.
Have they experienced that message yet? Has that gone up yet?
I believe yes.
Oh, no.
No. That was the episode 2 YouTube ad read. Okay. They heard me say that.
Damn. I wanted to gaslight you into thinking that you stole that word from me. Damn. Too bad. Anyways, Toby, you haven't said words yet.
I have not said words yet, but I believe I've said chock-a-block in the past on an episode, so I'm a member of the chock-a-block club.
Oh, really?
Wait, do you? Oh, no, you do. You say that the intersections are going to get chock-a-block full of roadblocks.
Yeah, full of roadblocks.
Which is a great
Ben
phrase.
Stole words from Toby.
I didn't steal words. I love saying chock-a-block. And also, I'm insulted that you think I don't know the etymology of chock-a-block.
What is the etymology of chock-a-block?
It's a nautical term, Sam.
Is it?
Elaborate, please.
I cannot.
Well, we're off to a really efficient start to the podcast.
So y'all start by looking through the windows of the Clapham's National Clock Museum. And let's start right out with a question. Lagged Jet, great name, questioned Sam and Toby, were you surprised by Ben and Adam quickly completing the clock challenge despite the museum being closed?
I was surprised to see them moving on from it because I guess we sort of assumed they'd have to veto because we didn't quite, you know, imagine that they could look through the window. But in hindsight, that's probably a good idea they had. And I actually love the footage of how sad Adam looks just before they do find the clock of him just staring at the floor kind of praying to the clock gods to find something.
Yeah, I think we didn't realize like super specifically in the moment that they had basically done it when we expected them with 30-minute veto. It was a little confusing because the thing that you don't, I think, see in the edit here, actually, I guess you see a little bit of y'all getting McDonald's, right?
Yeah.
Wait, do you?
Yeah, very briefly in the last episode, you see us getting McDonald's.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because we had the rest period then, and y'all took that not very far away in Whangarei. I mean, I remember looking at the tracker then, and I remember being a little bit surprised, but not massively. I think seeing it in the edit, it was like a little bit annoying, but like totally fair. I mean, that was completely valid interpretation and maybe a little bit lucky. There was presumably a lot more to the clock museum than what you could just see through the window.
Oh, so yes. It's a much larger yeah. museum.
Yeah. So it's pretty lucky that y'all were able to find that. So a little bit frustrating, but totally fair.
Yeah. A lot of people have pointed out that there was a large clock like right in front of us that said the time exactly. And I just want to mention that we did notice it, but it was under a sign that said clocks for sale. And we were not sure if that counted as being on display at the museum, which the challenge specified it had to be. So I think if we had been unable to find another one, we might have tried to go with that and contacted you all for a rules clarification agreement. But seeing as we were able to find another one that was clearly on display that counted, with only another 30 seconds of looking, that's the one we went with.
I'm sad that we didn't get to see the Clock Museum. It seems like a really cool museum, and if you're in Whangarei, you should go. We saw lots of cool clocks, and one of my favorite lines from the series that we had to cut was Adam saying, there were lots of cool clocks in there. There was a Mickey Mouse clock. I just wanted to throw that one out there because we had to cut it, and we were very sad.
I'm sorry. But then we get to glowworms, and I'm very sorry that we didn't get to see this. I mean, the whole experience of watching y'all's side of the first couple episodes is like, damn, they got to do much cooler stuff than we did. Of course, you know, it was all worth it because our routes, I think, proved a little bit better. But still, it was like, oh, man, that glowworms. I mean, it looked cool on camera, and I'm sure it looked a bajillion times cooler in person. So I am jealous.
Yeah, the thing about it was, and you can hear us talk about it, like, it's really hard to get them to show up on camera. So we did those long exposure pictures so you could see it. But like the long exposure pictures are the thing to look at to understand what it was like to be in there. Because it was incredible. I think I said on camera, I think it's maybe the coolest thing we've ever done on the show. I mean, Ben, would you agree with that?
I would in many ways agree with that. Did we include this whole segment that like we had wanted to go see glowworms?
No, we cut that. We cut that. Yeah, oh, this is a good chance to explain this.
This is interesting. So we, from the very start of designing this season, we were like, New Zealand, it's got glowworms. We want to include a challenge where we can go see glowworms. That would be awesome. But almost every single glowworm cave in New Zealand. It's like a guided tour. It's several hours. You have to sign up way ahead of time. You can't film. You can't do anything.
And yeah, you can't film. So in every other glowworm cave, not only is it a whole guided tour thing, you are banned from filming in them, even if you're on a tour. All of them have that policy.
That might be the big glowworm like tourism places, but I do know the sort of where I grew up in the North Island, there's heaps of just old underground mines and sort of tunnels and rail tunnels and things that just have heaps of glowworms in them and you can walk in. So it's luck of the draw, I guess. But as an American tourist coming over, if you're Googling glowworms, yeah, you guys found a good one.
Right. Well, that was exactly the thing, was that was the only one we could find that was just like, then this one was just like, oh, it's just a cave. You can just go in there whenever you want.
Yeah, yeah. I had a question for Ben. I noticed you were just wearing sandals, Ben. Was that your intended footwear choice?
I was wearing some Birkenstocks into the cave. It was not the best choice, but I had forgotten to bring like water shoes, which would have been appropriate for that. And a whole bunch of other things that we did. But no, I was wearing Birkenstocks and that was not the best choice.
Yeah, it did look a little challenging.
Well, Ben, another quick question for you that a lot of people have been wanting to know. Did you eat a glowworm?
I did not. They were up too high. I couldn't reach.
But also, if you had, you probably couldn't tell us, right?
No, I'm going on the record as saying I didn't eat a glowworm. And if the government of New Zealand wants to come after me, that's my official stance.
I feel like now you're making it sound like you did eat a glowworm, which I
didn't eat a glowworm.
I didn't see you eat one, at least certainly. I believe he didn't eat one, but it's possible that he did it while I was looking.
If I ate a glowworm, that would have been a snack zone.
That's true. That would have had to have been a snack zone.
So then things start to heat up because we get our, I believe, first roadblock of the season, right? Am I getting that right?
That is correct. The first use of any power-ups this season.
Always hard to remember because we do not do our work on this super chronologically in the post-production, so it's hard to remember the chronology. But yeah, so, I mean, I think it's fairly clear why we wanted to use it. We were on one of those really valuable conversion points, and we realized that we probably wanted to build ourselves a little bit of time for Auckland.
Yeah, I know. It just says a lot of decisions of roadblocks and things happening up to Auckland, which, as you say, Auckland was such a big challenge. We really wanted to maximize our chance of doing well in it.
Yeah, and we got some good questions about roadblocks. Kriegis asked, do roadblocks need to be thrown at intersections to give teams a pull-off point? Yes, actually, that was one of the rules that we kind of wrote, but I don't think ever really told the audience directly because it was more so like a production practicality rule. So we always needed to make sure there was like either a good road to turn off onto or like a very clear, clean pull-off.
Yeah. And that was one of the jobs of the passenger. We mentioned that the passenger has a lot of jobs to do. They are constantly checking, I guess, intersections and pull-off points that could be good for roadblocks, and also checking that those pull-off points are far away from shops or civilization or other things that would make a roadblock easy.
Yeah, and it was not always like 100% easy because there were definitely times where it had implications because there were only so many places you could pull off. So it kind of made a multi-minute difference on where you could drop one that did have an impact. We had another question from Ultimate Porkman. Can a team have multiple curses or roadblocks in hand and use the one that fits the situation best? Or can a team only buy a new one after they've used their previous roadblock / curse?
Another good question. You can have multiple roadblocks in your hand, multiple curses in your hand, and use them whenever you see fit.
And I think that's even encouraged.
I would say it is encouraged, yes.
Yeah, kind of the idea of having that hand of power-ups for sure.
Yeah, because, you know, strategically, we wanted there to be the opportunity for you to choose the most interesting time to use a power-up, you know? Because at one point, Ben, you remember in the game design, it was going to be the case that you didn't buy a roadblock from the deck and then randomly draw a card. Every roadblock was going to be available to buy, and they would each cost different amounts. And
yeah,
you would be able to buy what the specific challenge was. And then we felt like that didn't work, but we still wanted there to be strategy in the roadblocks So we allowed you to get multiple ones and decide when you wanted to use them.
Yeah. I mean, that ended up just being way too complicated. I mean, there were going to be fewer roadblocks, but that design, yeah, was just like there were going to be like, you know, 20 things in the shop. And it was just, it was too much.
Too hard to balance something like that.
Yeah, that was the other problem with it. The reason we ultimately didn't do it, the biggest reason was it was impossible to write them and for it not to feel bizarre and arbitrary what they were. Because like when you draw them randomly and it's like, you know, destroy a ring, it makes sense that it's this weird specific thing because it's like, you know, I mean, you drew it from the deck. If you can just buy them whenever you want, they need to feel more almost like inevitable somehow as an obstacle. And it was impossible to do that.
Yeah.
So then y'all do the roadblock. Wasn't really a big challenge, right? I mean, I guess it lost you what, like 15, 20 minutes just by doubling back?
I think a little less than that. I think only like maybe 12. I don't totally remember, but not a lot. I think definitely less than 20.
Not the most devastating one.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you guys... I think that you thought that we were quite far from any shops. Had you not considered that we could go to a gas station? Because that gas station wasn't that far away.
It's a little hard to check exhaustively all the shops. So we can kind of say, oh, this looks sort of far away from things, but it's hard to really be certain when we drop one. So it's disappointing to hear that you were not inconvenienced too badly.
I mean, we literally just turned around and we were like, we're going to stop at the first gas station we see. And there was one a few minutes back.
Disappointing.
It wasn't that bad.
I don't remember that one too much since it wasn't the most important moment or anything. But yeah, maybe we just miscalculated or something. But yeah, then we made a goal through a virtual rugby uprights. Yeah, so what was happening in the background as we were getting to Centennial Park, what happened in the background is I guess I was the passenger then. I was trying to find the exact spot because y'all had put it on at the exact spot. But then I pulled it up on Google and I was like, oh, I don't know if there are rugby uprights here. And I slowly realized that seemingly the rugby uprights were only there sometimes because I was like going through Google Street View and imagery and stuff like that. So
in hindsight, I think they take them away in the off season for rugby. So yeah, must have been there at the wrong time. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone mentioned that.
If you look at Google Street View, yeah, you can see this. If you go to Centennial Park in Wellsford, you can look at like multiple dates of Google Street View. And like, if you look at, for example, March of 2008, they're there. If you look at December of 2009, they're there. But then I think like if you look at like June of 2012, they aren't there. Oh, no, they are there. They're on the other side.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they were there in almost all the street views, except maybe the most recent one. But like we had seen pictures of like rugby goals at this place. And I guess in my mind, a rugby goal is like, I was thinking of it like a field goal, like in football, which you would never take that down. Like, I don't even think you can.
Yeah, I wonder if it's maybe because they're wooden, maybe because you don't want them like rotting or something. Because now that I think about it, like there's actually a rugby field where I live because there's a rugby team where I live and they do take them down out of season. So it's the same thing. And some people commented that. So makes sense if they're not trying to damage the wood.
We did get over that hurdle pretty quickly in our own way. And we moved on to embarrassing ourselves a little. The irony is not lost on me that we were wearing the rugby shirts whilst not doing a great job at kicking the ball. We probably looked like drop kicks for a minute there.
Yeah, I think that last kick, it looked pretty good.
Oh, no, yeah, you did well, Sam. You were the MVP. I'm really glad and grateful that you got the YouTube video, got the skills, and got us out of there.
Well, Toby, you famously wanted to veto. Do you have any...
Oh, wow, you're putting her on the spot.
I am. Well, when I watched the footage, I was shocked. You didn't believe in him.
I didn't say I wanted to veto. I said I wanted to consider other options, okay? But I was feeling a little hopeless, I'll admit. And so that's why I said I'm really glad that Sam pulled through and was able to do it for the team.
Yeah, I think Toby was often faster with the hole digging challenge. Toby was a little bit faster to maybe get to the pragmatic possibility of vetoing than I often was in these, but it was a good dynamic to have because I think that meant that we would have a good like push and pull considering it. And therefore it was, you know, we would kind of consider it as an option. But in my mind, it was a real last resort. I think in Toby's mind, it was like a viable way to get past the challenge. But the problem with vetoing is like, then y'all would have like totally caught up.
Oh, big time.
If we vetoed or didn't veto and still went on, it kind of would have led to the same thing. Y'all would have caught up. and we would have basically just equalized it because y'all would not have been able to pass the gate until either one of us completed the challenge, which would just, I don't know, been a nerf battle or something that wouldn't have been that productive in the end for either team, or, you know, just waiting out the rest of the veto. So I think we made the right choice in the end.
You don't really see it in the edit, but we were actually quite anxious that you guys would catch up to us while we were kicking the ball. And after I would sort of kick it, I would run to my phone and check the tracker just to make sure you guys were not like approaching the field and about to run out, because we were very vulnerable in that point.
Yeah. It also was not lost on us that like either way we cut it, we had to spend 30 minutes vulnerable for the next challenge, because the next challenge, whichever route we took, we were spending 30 minutes having fun at either the Helensville laundromat or the Megazone. It was less so like catching up there. It was more so unlocking the possibility of getting caught up to pre-Auckland.
Yeah.
And clearly, I mean, you saw how close it came. So, you know, it was worth it. But I guess the last thing to talk about this challenge is that caused a little bit of controversy, I guess, because turns out that a drop kick involves the ball bouncing off the ground before you kick it, I guess. I think, Adam, you wrote this one, right?
Yes. Well, I think, unfortunately, if anyone is to blame, it's me, because I did not know that when I wrote the challenge. And if I had, I would have specified in the text of the challenge, you must drop the ball onto the ground before kicking it. I was thinking of it just as like, kick the ball through the uprights, which is why that's all the challenge says to do other than the title of it. And I just put drop goal in the title because, you know, it rugby, New Zealand, thematic, you know, resonance. But if it makes anybody feel better, I wrote the challenge and my intention when I wrote the challenge was not that it had to touch the ground before it went through the uprights. So the only person who was hurt by it would be me and Ben. And considering that I wrote it and it was my intention that it worked that way, I think that no one was ultimately wronged.
Yeah, and I don't think we would actually wanted it to be designed that way because we tried that method. It would have been really difficult to the point that that challenge probably would have just ended in the veto. And we don't want challenges to end in the veto. Like the veto is kind of there because we know that like, you know, clearly based on the experience from the digging the hole challenge, like that's one that, you know, we ideally would have designed that in a way that it was going to be difficult, but always possible. But, you know, we can never know. We just don't have the time or the budget to be able to, like, I don't know, go to that beach in advance and test exactly the depth of it. So we have to have that mechanism of the veto. And in this case, you know, I think that would have likely ended in the veto because it was really hard to get the right accuracy, even just to like the timing. I mean, the timing was the biggest thing. To have your foot contact the ball at the right time, doing that while dropping it first was really difficult. We kind of just propped it up on the grass. Even that was really difficult. So having the kind of looseness that we did and how we interpreted the challenge and how we intended the challenge was pretty necessary for it to be what we wanted it to be.
Yeah.
But also, like, I guess the last thing to add to it is just like, we know internally that like, if there is a very specific way that we want a challenge to be done, then that's going to be in the card. Because if it's a very specific way, then we've talked about it, we've discussed it, and therefore we've probably also put it in the text of the card. So I think we also kind of just as a shorthand know that if a card is as open-ended as, you know, do a drop kick into the goal, then it's kind of just like, okay, you need to kick the ball into the goal, basically.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
we don't tend to rely on like very specific terminology as a way of doing it. I mean, that's getting into the weeds, but that's just to say, this happened the way we intended it to. And we'll probably circle back to this subject because there's another instance of it. So I don't want to conclude that thought too much because I think we'll talk more about challenge design a little bit later.
Yeah. Well, another thing I'll mention as well in challenge design that's just sort of interesting is like the vetoes, Sam, you were talking about the vetoes. Like it is very, very difficult to design challenges such that they are difficult but doable when you can't test all of them because like, there are 74 challenges on the map. Many of them are in places that we cannot go to. So like when we write a challenge that's like, you know, as you said, like dig a hole of a certain depth at this beach, like we can't test it. You know, we just have to hope that it's deep enough. And then like, even if we're right 90% of the time, that means that there are going to be like 7 or 8 challenges that are impossible. So I actually am often surprised that more things aren't impossible.
Yeah. So then we decide to go on the route to the Megazone. I think this was reasonably obvious.
The Megazone, yeah, lots of fun was had. There was like a little random hobbit house on the hill behind the Megazone that we went on a hike to, but that got cut out, unfortunately. Otherwise, that was pretty straightforward.
Yeah, we made sure to fill our 30 minutes. I didn't want to have another experience. Like, people didn't think we had enough fun when we were at this casino in Singapore in season two, and people yelled at me endlessly about that. So I wanted to make sure this time that we had as much fun as possible. So we really filled the 30 minutes to the extent that we couldn't fit it all in the edit.
I did feel bad about cutting your visit to the Little Hobbit house, but it was just a thing where, like, we needed to move through that segment to get to Auckland.
Yep.
That's okay.
And the thing was, the Hobbit house was weird, but I basically had a choice that I could include you guys finding the weird little house, or I could include you playing 20 questions and doing the cookie time. And I thought that the phrase cookie time was very funny. And I also thought it was extremely funny that Sam immediately guessed Jacinda Ardern.
Yeah.
Well, we actually played multiple rounds of 20 questions with other answers that never got to the show. And that was one of the worst rounds, or at least the shortest rounds. But
yeah, it was certainly the shortest. Every other one I think we played, we had to, no matter which way we were playing, we had to make it like 26 questions or something just to make it fun. But we had some very good 20 questions runs. I'm disappointed we couldn't get more in. But yeah, it's tough to fit a whole 20 questions in. It's not very entertaining to show 3 out of 20 questions.
Yeah.
So if you want to know who were the different people that we did, we did one round where the answer was Ludwig, the streamer who often plays jet lag.
We're allowed to say that now because he finally streamed the new season last night.
Oh, did he?
Did he? Oh, I didn't know. Yeah. That's really cool.
Wow. He said he might not watch it. Controversially, he claimed
he did. Wow. Ooh.
I think he said that he wasn't going to because he was moving away from React content. And then he
said he wasn't sure, but he talked about why he was planning to probably not. He said he wasn't sure, but he was like, this is why I might not do it. But seemingly he's come back to the well.
Nice.
I would like to say something going back to the Jacinda Ardern answer. What you might not realize is this just, I think as you landed in New Zealand, Sam, was that when she announced she was resigning as prime minister. So her name was very much in the zeitgeist at the moment. And maybe that's why you
I think
her.
She resigned like 4 hours after I got there. I was like, man, this country really gone that downhill this fast? You can't even hold out.
Yeah, that happened when we were on the plane.
It was like chaos erupted, yeah.
Yeah, so it was definitely like, okay, obviously, yeah, we're going to be, maybe that context gives Toby a little more credit that like, okay, yeah, clearly Jacinda Ardern was top of mind. I mean, she's always top of mind for any Kiwi. So we had a decent amount of questions about, well, to give a little context, we finished our day. And keep in mind, this is all day one. This is 12 hours of stuff. So imagine how tired we are at the end of those 12 hours. It was, I think we've talked about this. I forget if we've talked about this in the podcast yet, but like day one of this season might just be the most grueling day of jet lag I've ever had.
I think almost certainly.
Yeah, it was a lot. So anyway, we were all exhausted. We finished literally like 30 seconds away from the Megazone. So we got a question from Why Won't You Let Me Go? Oh, that's concerning. Anyway, what's the process for the rest period? Does each team have a different method of picking/choosing hotels? Do different teams ever find themselves at the same hotel? Great question. It can be a bit of a crapshoot. I think it was actually a little bit more difficult than it normally is in New Zealand. In our case, on our side for day one, so we finished the Megazone with about 25 or so minutes north of Auckland. And there were a few hotels north of Auckland, but for some reason, they were like all booked up. I mean, obviously we're booking very last minute. I mean, it's like what, 9 p.m. and we're booking a hotel then. So we actually, on Toby and I's side, we drove all the way down to Auckland, which was a little bit frustrating because we kind of wasted an hour total going to and from Auckland. The upside though was like, we were able to get a really good hotel. It was actually weird because the hotel that we ended up getting was a block away from the hotel that we had spent the whole like two nights of like the prep period. So it was like a little weird being back there mid-game, but we were able to get to like a really nice hotel, get room service and everything, but it just meant that we had like an hour less sleep. I think on y'all's side, it seemed like you had to go to kind of a less solid spot because you were a little bit further north, right?
Yeah, I think our hotel was in Warkworth and I don't remember where
it was. Pretty
stayed.
Nice, actually.
It wasn't bad though, yeah. I remember it was totally fine. I think we drove through McDonald's.
Seems like y'all got a lot of McDonald's time.
Well, often it was the only place that was open was what was difficult about it.
Everything. Yeah, I'll vouch for that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we noticed constantly that like our end time was exactly 9 p.m. And on average, every single restaurant except the fast food places would close exactly at 9 p.m., yeah. which was kind of frustrating.
It was difficult to get dinner. Even that first night, it was a really nice hotel we stayed at, by the way, in Auckland. Yeah. But it's like, as soon as we got in, we had to order like room service the minute we got there. Otherwise, we'd not have dinner that night.
Mm-hmm. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but you stayed at the QT Auckland, right?
I believe so, yeah. Because I think I recommended that to y'all.
Which is where Ben and I stayed for our stranded in Auckland period after the season ended.
Wasn't it nice?
It was lovely. I'll have more to say about it later.
That's true.
But yes, it is a nice hotel.
Generally speaking, though, like finding hotels in New Zealand was very challenging. Because like when you're in the US and you're in any little small town, there's going to be like a decent, nice chain hotel to stay in.
There's always like a Hampton Garden Inn, yeah. or something, a Hampton Inn or Garden Inn or whatever.
And that was very much not the case in New Zealand.
Yeah, it was not.
Yeah, what we're saying is we need more Americanization of the world.
Of all of the Americanized things to do to the world, that is not the worst one. That one would be kind of nice.
Honestly, yes, because, well, actually, you know, those hotels in the US are locally owned. They're franchised. So it's not like you're giving money to the big chains. And they're much more convenient than what we got in this case, which, again, we'll talk more about this, I think, in maybe one of the episodes after the season ends, because I think we have a lot more to say about this. But, like, we constantly were just, like, going to those hotels and, like, there were some cases where, like, you know, we would rock up and, like, the owners were, like, mad or the managers were, like, mad that we were checking in that late and booked that late. And it spent, like, 20, 25 minutes to get a key. And it was just, like, the convenience factor was low and maybe that doesn't matter to most people, but they got to consider the people doing a cross-country race for YouTube. We exist. Anyways, we got a question from Seaside Numtot that was kind of related to this. How good was that first rest period after such a hectic day?
I would say it was good to finally have a rest, but it was hardly even relaxing. Like, I only just had enough time to eat something, go to sleep, and then wake up the next day and get in the car, because we had to drive all the way through Auckland CBD, through the traffic, the motorway, Harbour Bridge, everything, just to get back to where we needed to start the game. So even though you guys gave us rest periods, it was still difficult. I was still like just getting more and more exhausted as the game went on.
Yeah, with these rest periods, even with 11-hour rest periods, which are fairly generous for this game, if you want to get the sleep that is kind of necessary for a five-day game like this, like, you have to get to that hotel, and it's not like you can really relax, because, like, you instantly have to, like, put all your devices on charge, get a room service order in, if it even exists. You have to do, like, the footage transfer, if it's, you know, Ben Adam or myself. You have to, you know, hop in the shower, brush your teeth. It's like, you have, like, just enough time to do all the things that you need to do in order to get the sleep that you want to get to not feel terrible the next day.
There's a lot to do, including overanalyzing in your head as you're trying to fall asleep all the decisions, good or bad, that you made during the day. So that it's a little tortured.
Tough to switch off.
Well, Toby, I was worried about, like, after we did the first day, I wonder, like, did it strike fear in your heart that you were like, oh God, is every day going to be like this?
A little bit. Like, I was in the hotel just sort of kind of processing everything. And I was like, oh no, like, this is so hard. I had fun. Yeah. But it was hard.
That first day really felt so long. And it just, like, in my mind, it was like, okay, if you multiply that by five, how am I going to survive that? In my case, I definitely felt like physically the worst at the end of the first day, partially just because, like, that hole digging challenge, we did it with our hands. So my hands were raw, and especially, like, under my fingernails were still, like, covered in sand and stuff, and just felt so raw. That had been, like, annoying me the whole day. I was still recovering from, I think I talked about in another episode, I was attacked by bugs at the hotel the night before we started. So I was, like, still feeling kind of bad from that. Physically exhausted, like, drenched in sweat, hungry, tired. I just felt physically terrible. So yes, I was very glad to get to the first rest period after such a hectic day, to answer the question. But yeah, anyway, so let's keep moving. We have so much to cover. Ben and Adam do a handstand. Or Adam does a handstand 60 times.
I heard that there was controversy about this.
There was a little controversy, but, like, there's been a controversy on, like, little every tiny thing on this episode, which is kind of...
I mean, look, if you watch that footage and you don't think that I put in the work and earned that minute of handstand, I don't know what to tell you. That was...
Yeah, that didn't look fun.
Miserable. And I also have a kind of bad wrist from when I like fractured my wrist in a scooter accident like 4 years ago. And it never like healed properly. Like it's fine, but like it's just a little tweaked. And so that was not a fun part of it. But yeah, look, if your feet are off the ground, that counts as part of your handstand. And I did it for a minute.
I don't think there should be controversy. That looked really difficult, Adam. And I felt sorry for you because that looked really challenging. I'm wondering if you drew the short straw with having to do it or if Ben decided he just wouldn't be able to.
No, it would not have been possible, I think, the other way. I think we would have never left.
Why didn't you try the approach of like Ben propping you up and trying
to
balance?
Oh, we did. Now, there's a good question.
Oh, really?
We actually did try that. I cut that out because... I mean, as you can tell, what I ultimately decided to do was that like fun music montage that mirrors the montage of you guys kicking the rugby goal, which was fun. You know, that's the first time that we've edited footage to an exact song before. And I did that and had a lot of fun with it. But it was harder to see. And I didn't really make as much noise when Ben was helping me. So I just edited those out. But basically, we tried that and it didn't work. And I was actually up for less time.
The audio from that sequence will make for good material for a jet lag out of context edit this season.
Yeah, I actually just found those. I didn't know that those existed. And YouTube recommended one to me like the other day. And I watched all of them. And very fun.
I just found them too. It's crazy you're bringing it up.
One thing that I noticed that I hadn't noticed before is I went to our mentions and I found people who have done like tribute videos. Like there was a group of kids in Hong Kong that made like a 5-part series where they did like Battle for America format, but they did it in the Hong Kong Metro.
What?
Wow.
Yeah. And it has like 27 views.
How do I find this?
I'll send it to you. I watched a little bit of the first episode and it seemed like fun, but there's a few. Somebody did a version of Connect Four in, I think, Germany, that has 118 views, because sometimes they'll tag us in their description. And so then it pops up on our little thing. And I just found that like the other day. Kind of fun.
I think it's so cool that we have a show that there is so much like fan-made content and stuff like that, that like we can't even keep track of all of it.
Yeah.
Very different from what we're used to coming from kind of the more educational realm of YouTube. But also make more fan art for like, I don't know, nerdy explainer video people. They deserve it too.
Yeah. But the question is, I guess, what would the Wendover fan art even be?
I don't really know, because everyone's always seems to expect before seeing me on camera for me to be like a 40 or 50 year old man wearing like a tweed jacket or something. So
I should get you a tweed jacket. That would be a fun thing for you to wear. That could be a fun gift for an upcoming event.
Do fan art of what you think Wendover would look like if you didn't know what I looked like.
Ooh, that's a fun prompt for people.
That is a fun prompt.
Yeah, but I feel like I'm going to regret saying that because it's going to be like insulting.
Yeah, you might.
Okay, so then Ben and Adam, you curse Toby and myself with the McDonald's thing. And I think we're going to continue the trend of yelling at the audience because...
Not yelling. We're not yelling at anyone.
We are disappointed.
We're lovingly responding.
We are lovingly responding because we were really surprised by this. Some people thought in Reddit that we did the McDonald's challenge wrong because we didn't like eat physically at the McDonald's, which, I mean... I brought this up, Ben and Adam and myself, we had a call earlier this day for actually next season game design, sneak peek there, but we had a call for that and I mentioned this to them. I think I got the longest and most loud no from Adam when I asked him whether that was how he had imagined that challenge, as in like having to physically, you know, stop within the McDonald's. So yeah, I mean, do y'all have anything more to say about that?
Just like, don't worry about it. It's like,
don't worry about it.
Yeah, just chill out.
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be dismissive and be like, just chill out. Like, I appreciate deeply that people are so invested in the game that they care about the challenges being done properly. Like, I would much rather people cared about it than that nobody cared. But I do think, again, it's important to keep in mind all of the challenges one of us wrote and all of us discussed before it was approved and put in the game, which means that everyone is on the same page about what the intention of the challenge is. Like, Sam knows what the intention of the challenge was because he was there when we discussed it and put it in the game. So, like, I think if anything, I just want to be like, you don't need to be as concerned. Like, I promise that we are doing the challenges as they were intended, because we take that very seriously. Like, we care a lot that the audience feels that we are doing the challenges in a way that's satisfying. So just like, I just want people to have confidence that we are doing that.
Yeah, I think what I would add to that is that the tightness of the challenges themselves, like essentially, like, again, as Adam mentioned, like, we know what we mean in advance because we've talked about it in way more detail between ourselves than what you see on the card. So I think, you know, the match between basically how well what we do matches to what the card is, that's more so a reflection of how well we write the card. And I think that's something that we know. So we've been trying to get better at that and definitely intend to continue to get better at that in terms of making sure we write the card in a way that feels accurate to what we intend. But it's also a tough thing to do because, like, we're writing them to be as succinct as possible while also being as specific as possible, because they got to be quick, because we got to read them out loud. We got to convey them quickly for the game to work. But we also want them to be specific so that the audience never feels like it's, you know, something that wasn't intended. So we definitely notice when the audience reacts and thinks that a challenge wasn't done in the way that they think it should have been done. But we don't consider that like cheating or something between ourselves. So I don't think they have to worry about it from that perspective. So it's more so about just making sure that, you know, I think we among ourselves get better at writing these in the way that we intend them to be done in the future. And that's about it. That's about all I have to say about that, because we could bring it up again, because some people even had issues with the dice rolling technique. It was just like, seemingly it was, I don't know, maybe there's not enough to talk about this episode. There was a lot of critique of the way that challenges were done. But yeah, again, just like, that's not what makes the or breaks the game in the end. So it's not something that ourselves were worried about, other things more than that. Next, we see Sam and Toby curse Ben and Adam with the walking thing. Toby, how did you feel when we pulled this?
Just relieved, because all throughout this time, we're just looking over our shoulder and looking at the tracker, expecting them to be right behind us. And I thought, okay, this is at least going to stop us from having to do that, from looking over our shoulder so much. We know we can slow them down.
Yeah, and I think we were feeling not very optimistic that we had. Basically, we felt like all of our advantage that we had like worked pretty hard to build had degraded. But suddenly this meant, you know, this was a translation of the coins that we got from that hard work into something that kind of built that advantage back up again. So it felt nice, because I think it felt like, in a way, I think it felt like we deserved a curse that would have an impact after having earned more coins.
We were momentarily hopeful.
Of the curses, pretty good one to draw, I would say.
I think that might, in fact, be, I mean, contextually, the best curse.
I can't think of a better one. Yeah.
Well, there are some at certain points that could be better.
But like for the Auckland challenge.
But for the Auckland challenge, I think that one has got to be the most devastating.
Yeah, because it's definitely one of the most walking heavy challenges because of the necessity.
To combat any accusations, we do have full footage of Sam shuffling the cards every time we pull it. So you guys can fact check us on the fact that it was just good luck.
Yeah, I'm really glad that we did do that, because, you know, to prove that these really lucky pulls were genuine. I'm not sure that that's always in the edit, but I don't know if anyone ever accuses us, we can, I don't know, release the shuffle cut.
I can speak to that, which is that Ben and I did not shuffle our cards every time because we were going under the tag rules where there's one shuffle and then you just pull the top one each time. So, I mean, obviously Ben and I didn't cheat. You know, we didn't look at our cards and they had been shuffled, but we didn't want to show you guys shuffling them every time and then not show us shuffling them every time. And then people would think that we were cheating. So I think that in general, we don't show shuffling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do have footage of you shuffling them every time that if anyone is ever concerned, I could show.
Yep. Okay, so I want to skip straight to the Sky Tower because I think there's a few kind of broader questions. But yeah, basically, Auckland. It's tough to think about, okay, what can we say without spoiling the next episode? Because the next episode is everything you could dream of out of an Auckland showdown where we are simultaneously in Auckland.
I think the next episode is one of my favorite episodes of any season that we've ever had.
It's very, very exciting.
Who's got something to say about Auckland without spoiling anything?
I need you guys to talk about how you knew of the 20 or so pillars, which one we were running right towards. Okay, this is not a spoiler, but Sam and I, after you tagged us, had a little time to reflect. And during that time, I went frame by frame through the footage I had filmed of the Nerf gun shoot. And I just was looking for you, Adam. I was like, how did Adam see us, but we didn't see him, and his head is not in any of the frames of the footage? And I was scrubbing through it, trying to understand, but I still don't understand how you did it.
Well, Toby, you'll see in the next episode, this gets addressed. We had no idea what pylon you were going to be at. And it was complete luck that you went to the one that we were standing behind.
Not only that, but like, I think if you had gone for a different pylon, there's a very, very good chance that Adam would not have hit you, because we had
because you only had one bullet, right?
We had one bullet. So we had rolled six. We had six steps that we could use to get to you.
You didn't even need to use one step because we walked right into you. I just can't believe it.
Yeah, I'm so frustrated about that sequence because not only is like it lucky on y'all's side, but like I think we talked about this a little bit on the tracker. It cleanly looked like y'all were across the street, and I was thinking that made sense because, okay, so they've, because I don't really actually know. So I guess part of this is like, y'all got a little bit more time than I thought you would have because you went to some different parking lot. Was that parking lot, was it like a store parking lot? Like, did you have to pay for it or did you just hope that they wouldn't notice or something?
I think that we were mostly hoping that they wouldn't notice.
Okay. Well, that kind of explains a little bit because we went into the Sky Tower parking lot. And that took a good amount of time to like go down, find a spot, pay, get up, navigate. So I think I was thinking like, okay, y'all would have like spent these similar amount of time. So therefore I was thinking like, okay, so clearly they didn't have much time because when we were driving, we were only like 2 or 3 minutes behind you. So I was thinking you were 2 or 3 minutes ahead of us. So therefore tap the Sky Tower. Therefore intuitively based on that timeline, y'all would have been like across the street getting your rings at, you know, one of the convenience stores that were right across the street. And therefore, you know, it made sense contextually that you would have been where the tracker showed you, but it's so annoying because like tracker issues is exactly what led to a lot of my L's during tag. And it was just like the exact same thing again, and interpreting the tracker as more accurate than it actually is. That was all around just like a really frustrating moment to see and to experience.
Yeah.
All around, it was frustrating for those reasons. But at the end of the day, we just messed up. We didn't, I guess, fully consider the risk that we were taking when we ran towards the Sky Tower. Because I wasn't even really afraid at that point. And Sam looks happy and is just like, yeah, it's a formality. I've got to tag the Sky Tower. We just did not expect that ambush there.
Well, it was a super last minute plan for us where like, all of a sudden we were like, wait a minute, we know where they have to be. And we realized like, if we wanted to shoot them, this would be our best chance because it would be the only time where we knew exactly where you had to go. It just, you that plan came together very quickly. Well, not exactly. Yeah. I think that what it was, we knew what direction you were coming from.
But I don't think you even really did because we could have popped out from that garage from either side. I guess you had our tracker. So
I had your tracker. So I knew that you were coming down the street from that direction. And I think that it's like the reason we were behind it is the same reason you went to it, which was that as you walked down that street, it was the closest pylon to you. That's why we had gone to it. And I think that's why you went to it. And then that's why it worked out.
Yeah. We have a few kind of broader questions. I'll quickly answer this one by ZM Knox. Did you ever learn the rest of the words on the road again? No, and I never will.
I would like to very quickly mention that you actually were singing the words to that song wrong the whole time because it doesn't even go back on the road again. The song starts with on the road again, and then it says, it goes on the road again. I just can't wait to get back on the road again. But there's no part where it just says back on the road again. So you were wrong, even with the part you thought you knew.
I would like to apologize for what seems like me ignoring Sam every time he sings that song, because I just, I have no idea what that song is or what he's talking about, and I do not know a single lyric.
How many times did I do that?
Several. Several. And every time I did not help you out.
Yeah. Anyway, Toast Sage asked, had Toby seen every card possible before the game?
Yeah, I think I'd seen them, but only like the day before some of them. So I didn't have a lot of knowledge.
Yeah. I do think it's like interesting for the audience to know that like we generally, everyone has, at least each team in aggregate, has a pretty good understanding of what's in the deck because, you know, Ben, Adam and I are all designing it and the guest always has the chance to look at it and probably doesn't remember it quite as well. But that does mean that like we are sometimes making decisions based on the potential of what we know could happen based on what's left in the deck or based on what we know could be drawn. So just a thing to kind of maybe keep in mind as you watch, because that does sometimes, I think, influence decision-making and thinking and stuff like that. Okay, Dan B, that's kind of like my last name, Dan Bay 44 asks, with jet lag getting more popular, it's becoming impossible to please all fans. When Adam and Ben, and then they add Ben and Adam does sound more right, are doing the design and simulations, what trade-off are they making behind the scenes for content versus logistics that the general fan may not know about?
Well, I'd start by saying it's, you know, Ben, Adam, and Sam, you know, we do the design together.
I think it's more Sam, Ben, and Adam, but yeah.
Okay.
Just sounds better, you know.
Sure. Well, it is funny. Ben and Adam sounds better than Adam and Ben because Ben and Adam is in an iambic pentameter, in case you're wondering.
Wow.
Why it
that's
sounds
a,
better.
That's a very specific answer. Smart. That's why Adam went to Yale.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that what trade-off are they making for content versus logistics that the general fan may not know about? I would say that, like, one thing that we focus a lot on is like making games that are understandable for a viewer. There might have been games that could potentially be more like strategically complex, but at a certain point, we have to make a decision about like the level of complexity that an audience member both can and also is willing to deal with. And that's certainly a trade-off that we're often trying to like figure out.
I think it's less so that like we think that, okay, the audience is incapable of understanding, more so that like we want a creative viewing experience that is, it doesn't require that much intense attention, because proper entertainment should be easy to experience well.
Yeah, like, you know, we're not trying to make Tar, you know, we're trying to make a show that has complexity and is, you know, and has the also, I think, the opportunity for you to engage with it and its strategy on a really deep level if you want. But also that if you are my cousin who's 12, you can watch the show and you can understand what's going on to a solid level and you can enjoy your experience as well. Like, I think that we're trying to please a lot of people. And so we're trying to make something that works on multiple levels. Like, we're trying to make something that if you're really into the game and competitive aspect, it works for you. But if you're more into like the comedy sort of fun aspect, that part works for you. Or like if you're there for more the travel aspect, that works for you. And that can be like a trade-off.
When we first conceived of this channel, the big question we were trying to answer for ourselves is like, is this a game show or is this a travel show? And we weren't really sure. And that's why the first two seasons, like the first season was very much entirely focused on the game. Like, it was not very much of a travel show. We were not going to exotic locations or across long distances. We were focused on the game. The second season, you know, was hardly a game at all, but had, you know, really great elements of travel. And then I think we sort of realized after doing those first two seasons that, like, there are elements of both kinds of shows that the audience attaches to and that we have to sort of incorporate those elements independently into each of the games and the seasons that we design.
I think another thing that we are always trying to wrestle with that can be difficult is like making something that feels fresh and new, both for the audience's sake and our sake, but that still feels like jet lag and is still engaging. Because it's like, we could just play tag every time, you know, which is like, you know, one, you know, our most popular season by views. Like, we could just do tag everywhere we go. We could do tag in Europe, and then we could do tag in Southeast Asia, and then we could do tag in the US, and every single season could be tag. But we don't want to do that. Like, we want to change things up a little bit and make things feel different. And like, this season is pretty different. Like, it's a road trip season. It's less on public transportation, which I know, you know, some people, you know, really love the public transportation aspect of jet lag, and we do too. But, you know, we made a calculation that was like, you know, going to New Zealand and exploring this really cool place, like, is worth the trade-off of, you know, doing a road trip season this time instead of a public transit season. But like, I think that's another thing we're always trying to balance is, you know, how similar do we want to be to things we've done before versus how much do we want to innovate?
Yeah. And I think the part of this question that jumped out to me as like a really good observation is the bit of like, it's becoming impossible to please all fans. And on a certain level, that's true. On a certain level, yes, you can't please all fans simultaneously because people do clearly watch this for different things. Put it at the simplest level, you know, kind of as Ben and Adam were saying, like, some people are watching this for the game, for the drama, basically for sports. Like, they're watching this as they watch sports. Others are watching it for the travel. You know, they just want to see cool places and kind of come along with us. Others are watching it for kind of like the entertainment, like, you know, the jokes and the fun and the coming along with, you know, a pair of friends, basically doing something fun in a fun place. There's a lot of different reasons to watch. And then I think a lot of people are watching it for a combination of kind of all three of those and the other ones that exist beyond that. So there's kind of a unique mix of what appeals to a given audience member at different levels. Like, I actually thought, you know, maybe to get a little more specifically, one thing that was I thought was kind of interesting this episode that I was a little bit surprised by is I saw some people that were like, oh, I really respect Ben and Adam for having spent those extra few minutes to enjoy the glowworm cave. And I thought that was interesting because in prior seasons, we've seen critique from the audience for like not taking the game seriously enough, like not basically, you know, treating the game as if it's like life or death, because like clearly the audience wants to feel like we are treating the game with seriousness because, you know, if we're not taking it serious, why should they? I thought that was interesting because, yeah, we've seen simultaneously a critique of exactly the thing that some other people are lauding. But like, that's the exact point. Like, it is different things for different people. Like, some people think that that's great, and that's exactly what you should be doing in something like this. You should be enjoying it because obviously we have an incredible opportunity to go to these really unique places. While others think that like, hey, it's a game. You got to treat it. You know, you got to have your, you got to treat it right. You got to have your kind of your ruthless mentality if you want to win. Hopefully the audience can understand that, you know, not every moment is necessarily trying to appeal to exactly their kind of viewer profile, but we're trying to modulate it. We're trying to, you know, make sure that we do appeal to everything. That's why, you know, as Adam said, we, you know, have seasons that maybe optimize for different things over other things. And that's also what keeps it like fresh and interesting for us. Cause I think we might get a little bit tired of just playing tag every season, especially if we had to play tag every season in a place that had trains. Cause then we'd just basically be playing tag in Europe every season, which would be fun, but I think less fun than being able to go to places like New Zealand. Okay, so we had lots to cover, and I feel like even within that, we had to cover everything quickly. So anyone have a word of the day? What's your word of the day, Toby?
Chock-a-block is already the decided word of the day.
Wow, you nailed that. That is the word
You're
of the
totally
day.
Totally right, yeah. So points for that. Ben and Adam, anything else to add?
I love you all.
Oh, I love you too, buddy.
I was talking to the audience.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, fine then. I stand by what I said.
Well, thanks so much for listening. We hope you're enjoying these. Always let us know if you have suggestions for these. We are truly doing these podcasts for you. So more than anything, we're open to suggestions. And make sure to come back each Wednesday for your questions. Make sure to get them in quick. I know it's difficult, but you know, we record these quickly after release so that we can get them out to you as soon as possible. And see you next week.
Bye.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.